Trading in futures products entails significant risk of loss, which must be understood prior to trading and may not be appropriate for all investors.
Good morning, everybody. It's Friday, March 8th. It is 5:28 a.m. Central Time. Grain markets are mixed this morning. Matt Bennett is with us here today. Guys, let's start off with this solar panel story, which is an area of contention, to say the least.
To offset lower grain prices and increased input costs, farmers are turning to leasing land to solar developers. Given that farmer income is forecast to drop by 26% this year, solar offers farmers an alternative revenue stream. Solar has increased in recent years, partially due to President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which offers tax incentives for solar developers. In 2022, 116,000 farms had solar panels, a 30% increase compared to 5 years before. Some farmers, however, are concerned that solar will accelerate the loss of farmland. Between 2017 and 2022, according to the USDA, the U.S. lost about 20 million acres of agricultural land.
So there's a couple sides to this, Matt. There's places in Illinois and Minnesota and Iowa where, you know, cash rent might be anywhere from $300 to $500 per acre. I don't know. And these solar companies are coming in and they're bidding $1,000, $1,500 an acre. I've heard numbers as high as $2,500 per acre on long-term leases, like 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. If you're a landowner, and especially if you don't have to look at it every day, it sounds really attractive from a financial standpoint. But if you're a farmer and you're bidding for land or trying to compete with this, it's impossible because you can't make money with the rents where they are now.
That's putting it mildly. You know, one thing I've talked a little bit about this winter is what, you know, principal crop acres might look like this year. If you look, you know, last year, actually, we took off and went higher again. And if you look at the graph, basically, it got us back to the levels of 2015 through 19. And people say, well, geez, you know, income levels were low back then. We're just back to there. I mean, income levels have no bearing on principal crop acres. And I think that's ridiculous because we've lost a lot of ground since 2019. Tillable ground is, you know, you've got solar panels on it. I can't begrudge anybody who goes that route. I've got clients, I've got family that have gone that route. I personally have not for a variety of reasons, but I can't begrudge anybody for doing that because the kind of value they can create out of that farm just blows away anything they could do from farming it. Of course, that's assuming that the company stays solvent. And, you know, I think there's a lot of different neat things with your lease that you can put together, whether it's, you know, to get the ground reclaimed back to original state through a bond that you put out there. But by all means, if it's done correctly, it's hard for me to ever argue that someone shouldn't do something like that because it's kind of a windfall for most of these folks.
So we're kind of in like a, it used to be the food versus fuel. This is a food versus energy debate, I guess. There was an executive from this company, Solar Farm Summit. He said this, there's plenty of acres and record supplies. I don't think we need those corn acres. And I don't know. I mean, that may be true right now, but that's a short term view. I mean, a couple of years ago, we were short on stuff. You run into another weather issue, you're short on stuff. Bloomberg had some cool charts here. These are the top five states where this is happening or supposed to happen. California, Iowa, Nebraska, Texas, by far the biggest. Illinois would be round out the top five. And then they're talking about just number of farms with solar panels and also wind turbines. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it just depends on who you are. Is this good or bad? Is it good or bad for the country, Matt? I mean, just in general.
That's a really good question. I don't know that I know the answer to it. I mean, here's the thing. You know, we've had wind turbine. There's a huge project trying to come right through our part of Shelby County here in Illinois. Some of the counties have made it extremely hard for wind turbines to come in through way of saying that they can only put so much weight on roads, just all kinds of things, because the state of Illinois actually said that, you know, local power doesn't mean much whenever, or local control doesn't mean much whenever it comes to keeping some of these energy companies out. It's been a very interesting situation. The kind of money that's being thrown around, Joe, is just ungodly. I mean, it's crazy the kind of money that you can generate here. Is it good or is it bad? I mean, that's the big question. You know, I have talked to growers that have had turbines on their farm and said, hey, these things have been great. They've certainly increased my income. I've had some folks say, hey, we had a hydraulic leak that came out of the turbine. And, you know, heck, we could never do something like that from a farm standpoint, but they just didn't seem to care. So you can be on all sides of this thing. I think that for farm country, for certain individuals, it's a good thing. Is it good for the country as a whole? I mean, I guess it just depends on how efficient this energy is. And I don't know that I know the answer to that.
I don't know either. All right, let's get to a less exciting topic.
USDA will release its monthly crop production and WASDE report here this morning at 11 Central Time. No major changes are expected on the U.S. balance sheets. Some minor demand revisions are possible. Traders expect the USDA to post a substantial reduction to its Brazilian soybean production estimate. The U.S. government's most recent estimate is well above estimates from Brazil's government and private groups.
If there is any sort of big, it's not even going to be a market mover, but if they cut the Brazilian crop by enough, maybe people care. But I feel like that's old news by the time it's printed. I find it hard to see anything really surprising out of this report.
I don't. I mean, I'm the same way as you. I just really don't think anything, you know, you've seen anything all the way down to, I believe the lowest estimate I saw was a Brazilian producer, you know, at 135, and, you know, they're probably lowballing. I mean, I don't know. I know there's a lot of people in that 145 to 150 range. Is USDA going to get sub 150 from 156? I don't know. But even if they did, you know, maybe it would give you a 10-minute bounce or 5-minute bounce. I don't know. I just don't think that this March report's going to glean anything. I think what most people, of course, have their eyes on is, you know, what do planning intentions look like? Is there going to be any big surprises there? And again, I don't know that you can do anything in the way of big surprises to really change the trajectory overall of what this market looks like.
You could see some small demand revisions on the U.S. side. Remember, guys, this is an old crop report. USDA doesn't put out its first like real version of the new crop balance sheet until May. So we're still looking at old crop numbers. We're going to start to look at new crop numbers here in a couple months. What else we got?
USDA reported a flash cancellation of U.S. corn to China on Thursday. Private exporters reported the cancellation of sales
SRW
of 100...
wheat, not corn. SRW wheat.
Oh, yep. Sorry. SRW wheat. Sales of 130,000 metric tons of U.S. SRW wheat for delivery to China during the current marketing year. The wheat market was higher on Thursday, signaling the market had already priced in the cancellation.
They don't really have much corn on the books to cancel, so that would be a non-story anyways. Matt, I'm told that there are more SRW wheat cancellations forthcoming. Is that possible?
I mean, we've heard the same thing. I mean, of course, it's certainly possible. I think, interestingly, you know, we continue to hear whispers of, you know, some corn business maybe towards China. And so,
and no evidence.
No evidence, but whispers of it, rumors of it, call it what you want. Obviously, there's something that's been in the market here, and I don't think it's been the March report by any means there on Thursday. But yeah, I think you could see more cancellations here. But I think it would be very interesting, you know, what China does overall, because I think as cheap as commodities are, there could be a point where they come in here and actually stockpile some stuff.
Okay, so corn was up 8 or 9 cents yesterday. Do you attribute that to just good old-fashioned short covering deal, or is there something like Chinese purchases behind it, do you think?
Well, you've got to wonder. You know, in the past, Joe, you and I both know that Chinese purchases, the actual purchases happened before you and I found out about it. And so, you know, anytime you see the market up a little bit more than what you would think due to the news, I guess my head starts going towards, hey, is China in buying maybe a little bit of corn? Is there some interest out there? Because whenever the sales are actually announced, that's long after people in the know knew about it. So, yeah, I think it's possible. You know, of course, there could be some South American weather. I know that there are some folks saying that they think, you know, you could stay a little warmer and drier in the Brazil, you know, Safrinha crop area. And so if that would happen, obviously it could impact production. But, you know, I just don't know. An 8 or 9 cent rally to me tells me there's a little bit of business going on somewhere that we don't know about.
So it was like Thursday last week that we started to hear China corn rumors, cargoes out of the PNW, yet we've seen no evidence. The official USDA rule is that if there's a sale over 100,000, it's got to be reported within 24 hours, and that's what triggers a flash sale. But they could be talking about sales and not actually signing agreements. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's what's going on behind closed doors.
U.S. soybean export sales improved last week. Net soybean sales of 23 million bushels surpassed pre-report estimates and were up noticeably from the previous week and from the prior four-week average. China was the largest buyer for the week. Again, unknown destinations canceled a significant volume of previous soybean purchases. Net corn sales of 44 million bushels were up 3% from the previous week, but unchanged from the prior four-week average. Japan was the largest corn buyer for the week. Net wheat sales were reported at 10 million bushels, down 17% from the previous week and down 16% from the prior four-week average. The Philippines were the largest wheat buyer for the week.
Matt, I think I used this chart at your meeting in Nashville about how soybean exports out of the U.S., just the trend is lower. We're exporting less because Brazil is exporting more. And if there's a problem with export sales and shipments right now, it's probably still soybeans, even though USDA came down last month.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would totally agree. You know, and the thing is, over the course of time, Joe, I don't think this is a trend that's going to change any. You know,
no.
I mean, this is 18th straight year
accelerating
more soybeans, and they're going to keep planting more soybeans. And so, yeah, it's concerning in some ways. But I mean, shoot, you know, if the U.S. is going to support, you know, this renewable fuel situation that we're continuing to see evolve, and you can use more beans domestically, it'd be a really good thing. But as far as the here and now, I guess was more what your comment was. Yeah, I think as far as corn's concerned, if the safrinha crop has some issues, actually you could maybe see, a little bit of improvement as far as when we get out here 2-3 months from now. I mean, time will tell, but corn shipments and sales have actually been fairly solid. It's just that as far as soybeans are concerned, this week was a good surprise, I guess. I just don't see any sales going on from this point forward to note, at least.
I mentioned this yesterday. I'll say it again. So when it comes to corn, if you want a real needle mover when it comes to the markets, on the demand side, it has to be exports because over the near term, because ethanol is largely fixed, feed demand is largely fixed. And then, of course, you run into the supply side, which would be Brazilian weather in particular at this point. And then, you know, we're not too far from the U.S. growing season. It'd have to be, you know, one of those two things, either weather or something on the export front.
USDA released weekly drought monitor data yesterday. Rainfall across central and northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin, and Michigan improved drought conditions last week. Conditions worsened in southeast Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, and northwest Ohio. Central Iowa saw extreme drought conditions expand. Temperatures across the majority of the high plains were above normal last week. Drought conditions across the area were mostly unchanged, except for a slight deterioration up in western and southwest North Dakota. When we look at the percentage of U.S. areas experiencing drought, corn country 32%, soybeans 31%, winter wheat 14%, spring wheat 30%, and cattle country 17%.
Matt, I'm going to say something that won't be popular, and you can tell me if I'm crazy or not. Dry weather in the Midwest, if anything, is bearish the market up until about third week in May.
I mean, it's hard to argue with. You ask any farmer if they're going to be 100% honest with you, you know, would you rather have a dry spring or a wet spring? What are they going to tell you? You know, what a dry spring. Get things established, get going. Yeah, there's no doubt, though, Joe, that I guess the warmer trend through February and at the start of March reminds a lot of people. I mean, you're going to hear 2012 a lot in my
world. We hear 2012 every year, though. Every year.
I agree with you. I'm just saying that year it was very warm in February and March. And there's a lot of folks that were planting corn and beans like the 20th of March. You know, is that going to happen this year? I don't know. I mean, only time will tell. I can just tell you that if a producer is honest about it, I'd much rather have a dry spring. So when my corn was knee high in 2012, it was the best looking crop that I had ever seen. We just didn't get rain thereafter. I mean, you could have the same actual, everything could be exactly the same, but actually get rain on the heels of it. And if you could have a dry spring and turn around and get rain at the right time, I mean, you could have 180 plus crop easily here this year. So, yeah, I think it's to be noted, but, one thing that it screws people up on, Joe, you know, as I've been out speaking, is that people are super concerned with how dry they are, you know, in parts of the Midwest, especially I'd say Iowa is where I've heard the most concern. And so people are saying, I don't want to sell anything, but I don't know. I think they could miss the boat because if they get a little pop in the market and this thing continues, you know, maybe Memorial Day. Bottom line is, I think that if they're sitting on their hands because they're dry, I think they're missing the point.
here's the deal with the markets. I don't have charts, but you guys got to take my word for it. You can look them up if you want. Last year we had a drought and new crop corn futures didn't start to rally till third week in May. We were like, remember, we were sub $5 and then we rallied to 630 during the month of June. In 2012, the market didn't start to rally till third week in June. It trended lower through a very dry spring and then finally started to take notice. So for the next, you know, call it 2-3 months, I don't think this is a bullish thing. I think if anything, it means quick planting and maybe more corn acres.
On Thursday, the dollar weakened on the prospect that the Fed may soon cut rates. The decline was due to Fed Chair Jerome Powell stating that the Fed isn't far from gaining enough confidence to reduce rates. Increased demand for riskier assets such as stocks also pressured the dollar. According to data released yesterday, the number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment benefits remained unchanged last week, a sign that the labor market is continuing to ease. The Labor Department will release February's employment report here today.
So the dollar has lost 2.1% since its February peak, which is actually a pretty substantial move. And this could inspire some positive sentiment or buying in the commodity markets. Now, money managers are still very heavily short across the grain complex. When you look at the weekly version of the dollar, this is more of a sideways affair. How much is this supportive at all, Matt, do you think?
You know, if we continue to see the dollar dip, I think it's going to be supportive. I think you've seen a little bit of evidence of it already. You know, as the dollar's dipped, you've seen various commodities actually catch their breath somewhat. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different commodities that I look at and you look at. But, you know, to me, it's definitely notable. And so it just depends. You know, if you would make a run back towards 100 or get below it, the last time that we did that, it certainly was supportive towards commodities. It would be again. Now, is it going to take off on a huge rally? I don't believe so. I think there's too many things working against us as far as the ags, which is where we're putting most of our focus here, of course. But I think it'd be supportive.
Okay, here's your commodity markets as a whole. This is the Bloomberg Commodity Index, which is a basket of energies, precious metals, grains, livestock, softs, you name it. It's been lower. I mean, we made fresh lows in this thing just last week, I think. And now we're starting to see a little bit of strength. So I don't know. I mean, you'd like to see, just for the sake of our grain markets, this thing take off. It's just, I don't know that we're quite there yet. What did cattle do yesterday?
They closed higher. Feeders closed an average of 84 cents higher. Live cattle closed an average of $1.11 higher. Box beef was higher again on Thursday. Choice ended the day at $306.61. That was up $1.70. Select ended the day at $296.26. That was up $1.17.
Cattle market thoughts, Matthew?
Well, I mean, I think that whenever you've got corn trading higher like it was yesterday and cattle's stronger, I mean, it certainly tells you there's people still wanting to own cattle. I don't know. I feel like we've kind of plateaued, though. I mean, I don't look for significantly higher markets here in the short term. Yeah, I think you're going to need a little bit more, I guess, really bullish news to kind of push up anywhere towards those old highs, you know, which would be $10 plus above. I don't know that we're going to do that right now. I still think there's maybe a little bit of gas in the tank for later in the year, depending on just how bullish those numbers come in. But for right now, I guess I'm not super friendly. I'm probably more of a neutral stance.
Outside markets are very quiet here on Friday morning, guys. Remember, report at 11 a.m. Central Time. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on